Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the September 19th, 2020 session of TeamSpeak for OpenHPSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I was involved fairly heavily in running the virtual DCC, so that was quite an endeavor. It went off, I think, amazingly well, and for the first time we were learning how to do all the pieces, and in general we're very happy with how it worked. So that's it for me. We'll go down the list. Next on the list we have Henry PA0HJA, and he's shown as recording in a way. And then we have Mike AA8K, shown as recording and mic muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.openhpsdr.org. Next, we have Rick, VE3MM. Hello, Rick, and it's been a while.
Oh, hi, Dave. Nice to be back here again. I haven't been around for quite a while, as you noticed. Congratulations on the DCC. It was really well done. I enjoyed a lot of the presentations that were put on. I spent quite a bit of time on Friday and Saturday last weekend listening to the presentations. It was great to be able to virtually attend the session. Haven't been doing too much radio work here lately. I've spent most of the summer up at a cabin in the north country of Ontario. So that was nice. The weather was great up there. And now we're back home and just settling in for a while. Probably head back up there a few times before the winter hits, though. So that's it for me, Dave. Back to you.
Fine business, Rick. And next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, folks. Good evening. Yeah, not too much to did not catch me in the DCC, which was unfortunate. So that's it for me. Back to you, Dave.
Say, Bill, you've got some sort of feedback or noise on your microphone. Might check the plug or something. We could hear you, but there was kind of a rolling static.
Okay, don't know where that's coming from. We'll have to look at that.
That was much better the last go-around, so just thought I'd let you know. Bill, did anybody show up last Friday night? I was so busy with DCC, I wasn't able to come over.
No, it was just me and Mike and Henry. We did a pro forma session and adjourned immediately.
Well, I'm glad you guys had a session. So I was tired from helping George run the Zoom stuff.
Yeah, understood it. Any idea how they did on turnout for a... You get more people showing up for virtual DCC than in-person DCC?
Yes, we had 204 registered through the website. And then when we were counting YouTube and the Zoom, I think the highest that we got up to was around 250-60.
Okay, good to hear.
They said the normal turnout in person was about 130-140.
Yeah, that's what I seem to be remembering from. So, oh well, I guess see if they manage to get back to in person. They end up in person next year. Does anybody know where is it? Back to Phoenix next year?
It's in Charleston. We still have a reservation at the hotel. We just shifted it a year to avoid losing the deposit. But if COVID's still bad, we'll do this again. If not, we'll try to have maybe a blended session.
Oh, I see.
So, Dave, did you switch up with George and back and forth on controlling the Zoom presentations?
No, George wanted to do that, but he wanted a complete backup if his site went down. And so I had all the talks on my machine, and if for some reason his line went out, I was ready to take over.
It almost sounds like a NASA moonshot or something like that. You're the hot backup.
Yeah. And it sounds like it isn't that hard, but there's a little bit of tension, you know, just to make sure everything goes smoothly. But it did go smoothly. We had one glitch on Friday, and otherwise it went great, and we were able to get things going through just fine, and so we were quite happy with it.
Oh yeah, I was impressed with the way you guys ran it. It was very well done, in my opinion. Things were on time. Things were very smooth. All the pre-recording the presentations, I think, was a great idea, and then switching to the live comments and questions afterwards was awesome. Yeah, there were tons of really interesting talks. It was great, but very educational.
Yeah, I think the things that are interesting is making it virtual, even though the time is not all that convenient, brought in a lot more international speakers. And the recording also helped the international speakers that so they could not be nervous while trying to speak and show slides. They could get it to where they were happy with it and send it in. I'm a big fan of doing the pre-recordings. One person wanted more live talks, but that's usually people, generally professors, who like to talk live anyway.
Yeah, right. I can understand that. Yeah, no, doing the pre-recordings probably takes tons of pressure off the presenter and allows him to, to work on his presentation and modify parts of it if he's not happy with it. But no, it was. Do you have a feeling for which was the most popular session?
We did get a lot of interest in John's GPS session, so I think that one was popular. Let's see. They're all about in the same range of about 250 on Zoom, all the main talks. Not too many people wanted to be first in the morning. We got fewer people first off in the morning.
All right, okay. Yeah, no, I missed the GPS one. I'll have to go back and take a look at the YouTube video. Are they being split up, or are they just the complete sessions are on YouTube?
Well, right now on the Tapper Digital is the whole day. There are two videos, the whole day for Friday and the whole day for Saturday. And that's what Zoom gives you without us doing much of it. We just turn it on and then it records it. I think Jason Johnston is going to try to break them up, but he takes a while. So it usually will be several months before he'd get through all of them. But everything's there. The one thing that's not, George did post slides at Tapper, and we have the chat talks for people who really want to go back through those, but figuring out how to get all that available is we're working on.
Right. Yeah, that's good. Well, kudos to everyone who participated in putting that on. It was very well done. Again, that's neat.
Well, thank you. We were a bit nervous, having never done it before, but there had been the HAMSCI session in March, and it went so well. And we, in the Tangerine Project, we have a collaboration with HAMSCI, and So we took their ideas from them. And then in between was SDR Academy in Friedrichshafen. So we also paid attention to what they were doing. And they were the ones that were doing the pre-recorded talks, and that gave us that idea. So it's all, and then after that, we had that QSO Today Expo, and John Ackerman was involved in that as well. So there was quite a bit of things to give us ideas.
Yeah, I remember the HAMSCI one back in March. I think that was just around the time we got locked down for COVID. So it was, you know, I was able to pretty well see the whole thing. So that was quite interesting. I could see how these virtual ham radio events are evolving through all of them. It's great that everybody picks up on the improvements and the ideas that the other groups have. So that's nice.
Yeah, I also looked at the GNU Radio Conference, which it was this week. And originally we were going to be in the same hotel in Charlotte, back to back. But they took a slightly different tact. They used some software that streamed to YouTube without Zoom, and then they even had vendor commercials in between the talks. So it was a kind of a different feel and flavor.
Oh yeah, I forgot all about the GNU Radio conference. So is that available on YouTube now too?
Yes, it is. So there are talks. GNU Radio is doing some reorganization, and they're going to be collaborating with SETI. So so they're going through how to restructure their organization. And then they have GNU Radio 3.8 out now, but they're already thinking about GNU Radio 4.0 and how are they going to do the transition to that.
So are they making some changes, huge changes between 3.8 and 4.0?
I didn't see the talk about 4.0, so I don't know exactly. I know in 3.8 they switched it. They did the big Python switch, which is from the twos to the threes, and that was one of the big things they did. They changed some of the C code in that as well, so that it's added quite a few modules. I know they have a satellite module now.
Yeah, earlier in the year, I got a hold of an Adlam Pluto, and then I spent some time playing with GNU Radio and it. So it's I've become a little bit familiar with GNU Radio, and recently there's been some. I think there was an article in QEX this month about a complete transceiver using GNU Radio, using the Adlam Pluto. So that's pretty cool. It's neat software.
Yes, yes, it is. And I did see that article, and I was interested. You're probably, I don't think anywhere in the North America can we see the synchronous satellite over Africa, but the British and Europeans are thrilled with using that satellite with the Pluto.
No, we're nowhere near being able to do it. I think the only part in the Americas is sort of the northern tip of Brazil in South America that can actually see the footprint of that satellite. That's neat stuff. I've been using a lot of the resources that the Europeans and are putting on the web for the Pluto with their work on the QO-100 satellite. That's a huge resource for them. They're having lots of fun with it. And I've also been kind of following the British guys that are doing the ATV stuff with Pluto as well. Yeah, it's a very, very neat device.
Yeah, it does sound good. I guess for our satellites, you'd have to have an azimuthal antenna and do tracking and all that kind of stuff, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's a lot. Well, I shouldn't say it's harder to work our satellites. It's hard to work the QO100 too, but once you get it set up, it's not moving anywhere. So once you get the antenna and the uplink and downlink going, you're pretty well fixed in there. But it's interesting that they're able to pretty well communicate through that with just using a $200 software-defined radio as the brain as the the main transceiver for that. It's quite something.
That is my local club with one of the elementary schools set up a QSO with the ISS, and that was quite an undertaking to we had to have a couple two azimuthal antenna setups for some redundancy, and we spent about 6 months figuring out how to do it so that we were ready for the 10 or 15 minute fly past.
You don't actually
Yeah.
need the Azel. I mean, you don't. For most paths of the ISS, you don't actually need the directional antennas, though.
Yeah, we had one, but and we had people who had used them before, so
User entered your channel.
but that's and then we also worked really hard with the students so that they understood what the transmit would be or what the QSO would be like, and we were able to get 12 students to
User,
at
your
each
channel
ask
started recording.
two questions in the process of the flyover.
Yeah, I think some of those requirements come from the groups that run the school top blah school contacts, wanting to be sure it works and things like that.
Yep, that's right. And yeah, we had a bunch of hoops to jump through to get it set up, and then working with the school system as well, so that they all, but there was a teacher that was a big advocate and came to our ham club several times to get us going.
Oh, I see.
It worked out interesting. We had the astronaut that we talked to was from Missouri, and so that made it familiar for the kids. And I believe it was the same fellow that had been here, that went on the SpaceX trip this time, who was one of the two astronauts on the SpaceX trip, was also from Missouri.
Oh, neat.
I was hearing them talk, Bill. I guess all the guys, after they landed, they flew over to Ellington Airport, which is on where NASA is in Houston. Is that correct?
Yeah, Ellington Air Force Bay, Ellington Field, and it's pretty much at the Manned Space Flight Center in Houston.
Well, I was wondering, shortly after they landed, there was that hurricane that came in over Lake Charles.
Yeah, I don't think that one hit Houston, did that much to Houston. That's far enough over. I mean, there's actually a fair chunk of Texas between Houston and Louisiana.
Yeah, I could see that. Steve Bible from Tapper had one of his children was living in Lake Charles and had pictures of their house, and I guess the house didn't fall down, but I guess it was totaled because of water.
I could believe that.
Right now, we're waiting. One of the Tapper board members, Bruce, who runs the store, he lives across Mobile Bay in Spanish Fort, and we haven't heard from him since before the Sally hurricane.
Bad year for storms.
We're assuming he's okay, but just doesn't have any power.
Yeah, somehow I think we used to be better at restoring power service.
Apparently, there's water everywhere there, and that was their biggest problem. But Bruce lives on a little hill, so he should be okay. Well, guys, I think I'm going to head back up and spend some time with my wife. So I'll say 73 and talk to you next week.
Okay. Yeah, 73. I think I'll take off and get some dinner here myself. Good to hear from you all, and have a good week.
73, Dave. Bill.
73, Rick. And 73, Mike, Henry, and Bob. See you next week.